from stpetecatalyst.com.
Hello and welcome once again to Arts Alive, the podcast of the St. Pete Catalyst. I am, as always, Bill DeYoung. Happy to be here, and today my guest is Giles Davis from Jobsite Theater. Is it Davis or Davies?
Davis.
Davis, that's what I thought. You are of British and Welsh descent, so Davies is pronounced Davis.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Yeah. So not quite the Davis, not quite the Davies, but Davis.
Well, I'll just call you Giles.
How's that? Fantastic.
Giles is currently in the cast of Shakespeare's Twelfth Night at Jobsite Theater, where you see him on stage often. Twelfth Night is running through February 11th at Jobsite, and I'm so happy to have you here to talk about it.
Thanks, Bill. It's always a pleasure.
Talk about all kinds of things. Giles, you are. He's playing Duke Orsino. No, by the way, it's a fabulous cast, a lot of familiar faces, and a lot of people I hadn't seen before.
Thanks.
You're a Jobsite Artistic Associate.
I am. Climbing up the ladder.
What does that mean?
Oh, well, yeah, quite. It means I've been working with them a long time, and they like me, and they honor me with the title. I'm around the table. If I wish to, I can put in my two cents. But it's really just a matter of, being directly involved with the company, feeling like your opinion matters.
Your opinion matters. See,
yes,
there's the
indeed.
Core of it there.
And it makes a big difference.
So you've known David Jenkins for quite a few years, I would imagine.
Right. I think we're nearing probably 13 years at this
point.
Okay.
And Jobsite, it's 25th anniversary season.
Yay.
So in other words, Do the artistic associates have direct involvement in what's chosen for the season, or just opinions?
They certainly can do, yes.
Yeah.
David's always interested if you've got something in mind.
Yeah.
It used to be, I think, a little more formal in the season play selection, in that everyone would go away and read a bunch of plays, and then they would get together and, formally go to bat for the plays that their list.
I've seen people do it that way, certainly.
Right. Yeah. And I think that became, a little problematic with the number of cooks and also, the speed at which you can get the selection process done.
Yeah.
So, not to move anyone away from the table, it just became less formalized.
Yeah.
So that if you have something in mind, bring it towards David. Otherwise, he'll be, he's always busy looking for new work and have some ideas in mind.
There's a Shakespeare production every season, am I correct?
There is,
okay.
Yeah. It's become a bit of an annual thing for us.
Okay. I mean, do you have any, because you are always, we can't say always to anything, but you've been the dialect coach and the assistant director for the
week. I usually
for the that weren't in.
Right. If I'm not in the production, then I'm usually there doing text advice, whether I'm in town or not.
Does he know, for example, what next year's Shakespeare is going to be already?
Not that I know yet. Yeah, I thought you might ask that.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself this morning, no, but right about this time is usually when David starts discussing these things. So
yeah.
I just haven't had the chance to pick his brain yet.
Well, let's talk about Twelfth Night. I thought it was very funny.
Good to hear.
Very, very funny. And what about the choices to cast, and I know what you're going to say, but I have to ask anyway, Malvolio
as a woman.
Catherine playing.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that comes with the freedom of the modern age. Obviously, well, not obviously, but in Shakespeare's day, it was only men on stage, legally.
Yeah.
So you had, younger men, boys, playing the ladies' roles. In which case Shakespeare only put so many women in the show. However, the competition level for women in the craft is higher, so the talent level often is better with the ladies. I think I can say that because I'm a man.
There's a lot of great performers.
There's a lot of great
show.
Performers
yeah.
here. There
yeah.
are.
Yeah.
The Fool
is generally played, I would say, by a man. Am I correct there?
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. At least in the productions that I've done. This is the fourth time I've done the show. Although the last time I did it, Roxanne, luckily, was also played the same role. She played Festy.
Okay. And but you were Malvolio.
I was Malvolio
yeah,
that
okay.
time around. Yeah.
So it is interesting. It's essentially, it's almost a throwback to Shakespearean times, but it's also the present day where gender doesn't matter so much.
Right. And there's a freedom that comes along with that. And it really plays to, something we're tackling in that, that mistaken identity. How fluid is gender?
Yeah.
And the freedom that a woman can have if she's a man or perhaps somewhere in between.
That was so interesting to cast Noah in that role.
And amazing how Noah and Newt end up looking alike.
They really do.
They do. If you saw them in their own clothes and their own hair, you would never mistake the two.
Yeah, Cesario However, the and moment, Sebastian, yeah.
Yeah, the moment you put them in the same costume and in the same hair, there's a lesson to be learned. In that we assume so much just simply by generally looking at someone. I know Bill because I know the hair and I know the clothes, and I assume, you know, if I were in this building, that's Bill.
Yeah.
But backstage, you can't make those assumptions. The number of times I've mistaken Noah for Newt.
What was interesting for me is that I hadn't read the entire cast list when I sat down and saw it. I didn't know that Newt was in it.
Mm.
And when Newt came out and they have that thing where we're giving away little plot points here. If you know Twelfth Night, you know what we're talking about, where Cesario and Sebastian come face to face.
Always a good idea to familiarize yourself with the
Newt,
plot.
That's Newt Romita. Wait a minute.
Right.
That was brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, terrific. Good to hear. Yeah, so, they're wonderful. And the, you know, their growth over the years, it's just been so good to see. Noah's the same way.
Yeah.
You know when you see them, you know, that talent level. It's just a matter of experience. And so pleased that they've returned to work with Jobsite again and again.
It was so interesting to me because Noah has a twin sister.
Right.
I
did not know previously.
Because I just met
also
her.
Also an actress, I think.
Yeah, she was just doing Indecent at American Stage. I did a story with her.
Oh, great.
And I thought, oh, no, it was Newt. Ooh, that's so cool.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
Hey, listen, let's turn the clock back a little bit here. You were born and raised in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Welsh-English parents, as I recall.
Right.
That's where you got the theater bug. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah. So it was community theater only in Hong Kong.
Yeah, community theater, because there was no professional English-speaking theater in Hong Kong at the time. But so many expats from all over the world, you know, very adventurous, cutting-edge psyches, looking for something to do and to hang together. So my mother, who was teaching at what would be, you know, high school level, and my stepfather, American, he was over there doing civil engineering.
We're teaching expats, though. I mean, we're not sort of teaching the locals.
Indeed, right.
Yeah, okay.
Teaching expats or, you know, more economically well-off locals.
Okay, so it's a combination thereof. But she was involved in theater.
She was. Yes. She was after school. And, of course, you know, she was responsible for me, obviously. And once I was old enough to go hang in a green room and just watch them rehearse, you know, at the ripe age of five or so, I just spend a lot of time, you know, doing my homework, watching my mom rehearse after school. Or, you know, if there was a performance, and it was too adult for my child brain, she'd, you know, sit me down in the green room, I'd finish my homework, fall asleep, and then when it was time to go home, she'd wake me up and drive me back.
But was it for you, Johns, was it from an early age, yes, I'm going to do this? Or
well, luckily I had an older sister. She was 2.5 years older than I was. And my mother being, you know, having great interest in the performing arts, she got my sister to do like an after-school group camp, if you will, called Speech and Drama. And they were doing a play, and they needed somebody to play the one-eyed cat, but they didn't have enough students. So my bossy sister said, oh, my brother will do that, and came home and informed me. So I was about five at the time, and I got to play the one-eyed cat in this play. I actually remember one of the lines, the only line. Yeah. Ooh, my eye, my eye. A lot of fun. And
so was that,
I got the bug.
That's when you got the bug.
And then I was like, oh, I really like this class. I'll stick it out.
So what do you go from Ooh My Eye to, you know, Thornton Wilder's Our Town and then into Shakespeare? Or slower progression?
Slower progression. It wasn't focused so much on acting or performance, more about the spoken word. So taking either sight reading or a piece of poetry and turning that into performance. And then through that group, I could do the Trinity College and Guildhall examinations. Both are British organizations that train youth in English as a spoken language. So I would do some competitions and go through a series of examinations, gradations. And then I did do some school plays.
Yeah.
Although that wasn't, you know, I was doing more sports. So I would do, you know, after school, this group, sports with the school. And then once I got to the same school as where my mother was teaching, I was, you know, 12, 14 at this point. I started doing some school plays there. And then it was, you know, 1997 was right around the corner. A lot of the expats were leaving Hong Kong. The writing was on the wall. China was going to, you know, take over. So my stepfather decided, okay, we're going to bring the family to the States.
How old were you?
14 at that point, yeah.
You went to Indiana?
I went to Indiana, yeah, from Hong Kong to Indianapolis in the early to mid-80s.
Culture shock.
Oh, it was and a half, yeah. That's kind of why I turned out the way that I did, my poor mom.
Says so much.
Yeah, it does, yeah. It was, you know, because at that point in your life, society has chiseled you into a particular shape. Mm. And your school has designed a hole for that shape.
Yeah.
It's just the unfortunate thing was English schools were designing a circular shape and American schools were designing a square hole.
It's the old square hole in the round peg.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
At which point I became aware of the hole and the peg. and I said, screw both of you. Pardon my friend.
That's what one does with a peg and a hole. Yeah, we'll keep that bit in, folks, because, you know, it's not TV.
Thank you, Bill.
So you arrive in America, and is the whole, like, theater training process different for you? I mean, did you have to relearn things?
No, luckily, the basics are the same. And I did have to, I realized quite quickly, develop an American dialect and understand my British dialect and be able to, you know, balance the two.
Yeah.
And even without doing theater, I learned that pretty quickly in high school.
So, you get assimilated, sure.
Yeah, and, you know, you realize people make fun of you if you sound a little different or you use the wrong words. I'll never forget, I was in art class. I think this is maybe my third day. And I put my hand up because I'd made a mistake.
Mm.
And I asked the teacher if she had a rubber.
Oh, God.
Yeah, you can imagine the result. So I pretty quickly learned that eraser...
Mr. Davis, I will see you outside in the hallway.
Eraser was the right term. So, I did start doing plays at middle school and high school.
Yeah.
And one of my mates, who I actually replaced in the play, he was pretty PO'd about it, because I was pretty good and had been trained.
Mm-hmm.
And the teacher was like, oh, we'll get the new kid in here. Wow, he's pretty good. We'll give him this role.
I'm surprised they didn't all call you the rubber kid. Years afterwards, you know.
Yeah, that kid. It took me a while to live that down. Luckily, I started spiking the hair and people forgot about the rubber.
Oh, there you go.
It was more about the hair at that point.
So you're moving up the ranks.
Yeah. Moving up the ranks. And by the time I got to high school, they really liked my work. So I had a good choice and selection of roles. And then they tried to put me in a musical, which was the last musical I ever did. I got to play King Arthur in Camelot. And I'll never forget one of the audience members. I'd really done my best. He came up to me and he says, oh, you kind of did the Richard Burton thing where you talk sang your way through it because you really can't sing.
That's a thinly veiled
And
compliment.
I was like, well, yeah, not really, but thank you. So then I realized singing was not my forte.
Yeah.
But although I did sing with the punk band for a good number of years.
Well, you don't need to be, you know,
exactly.
Robert Goulet.
Exactly. It was all about the stage presence and the singing went out the window, so no worries. I played to my strengths.
But you were never going to sort of go into, you know, banking or anything. It was always going to be something creative for you.
It was. It was. I was never, you know, I was young at an older age in that people here grow up quicker.
Yeah.
You're kind of forced to. And in Hong Kong, we could just be kids. So I was a kid for a long time. When I first came, I was really just still a kid. I really had no professional dreams or ideas at all. And then people start asking, you know, what do you plan to do? What do you want to do with your life? And I just didn't have an answer. And then finally, I think one day I just decided, you know, I'm going to do theater because it was the only thing that had been a con- a constant through my life.
Oh, sure.
And I didn't think it would be accepted, and it was. So I was like, oh, okay.
So
I can just I could just keep doing what I'm doing, and we're all good.
You didn't have your parents aren't going, you know, that's great. You're a good actor, son, but you need to get a real job.
My mother was not like that, but my father, my original father, he was having none of it, and he said, you know, Giles, you can't do anything with a theater degree. You need to get a second degree.
Mm.
So I was like, okay, I got to add something else to it. So something else that always fascinated me with history. So then I added the history degree, and for some reason, he was satisfied with that reply, although you pretty quickly find out, well, you can't do anything with a history degree either. So, I'm very pleased that I did that. One, a solid foundation in the humanities just makes you a better person. And studying history
makes
is,
you a better actor too.
Oh, without a doubt.
About inhabiting characters. And
without
that sort
a doubt.
Of, where do you go
and
to
understanding
school?
Style and how it changes over the years.
Exactly. Yeah. Where did you go to school?
I did my undergrad at Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana. David Letterman went there. Claim to fame. He has a scholarship still at Ball State for the straight C student in broadcasting. So if you get a B, you lose the scholarship. So it's pretty humorous because he was also a straight C student.
Good for him. That's funny.
I thought so too. Yeah. And added the history degree. And then I went traveling for about 5 years in between and came back to the States. And funny story here, how I got into grad school. I was really just looking for work. And was traveling through the Midwest and heard about one of these cattle call auditions, as you do. I hadn't really done my research, as I am wont to. And so I went to this audition and got a bunch of people interested and then realized, well, they're all schools. Why are all these schools? I want a job.
I know this. I mean, I've heard other people say this.
Yeah.
Same thing, yeah.
So, and having jumped through all the hoops, I was like, well, I may as well go and do the interview. And then I quickly realized that they were going to offer me a better job than any theater was ever going to offer me and pay me more money to do theater for 3 years. And I come away with a degree. So I was like, all right,
exactly.
Perfect, you know.
Yeah.
Another umbrella to live under.
Somebody recently said something to me very similar to oh, wait, I get paid and I have a degree.
Right.
And I get all this experience. Sure.
Sure.
So where was that?
That was at Ohio State University.
You were connected with the Shakespeare program there for many years.
Well, right after I got out of the program in Columbus, a mate of mine who had done his research said, there's a Shakespeare company down in Cincinnati. That's doing its auditions. You should come with me. So I called them up, and they were like, no, we're full. I was like, but, you know, if you show up at 5 o'clock, we'll try to slide you in. So, all right, perfect. So I drive down from, you know, I look online, or I'm not even sure if we had online at that
right,
point.
Right.
But I pulled out the map. I pulled out the map. And it said, you know, 2 hours down there. Wow, wonderful. You know, so I set off. I did not plan on rush hour traffic. You'd think I'd have thought about that. Nature of, you know, life in the theater, we don't live like normal people.
I've noticed.
Yeah. So I was late. So as I was running up to the theater, the fella who was there to see me, the artistic director, he was locking the door, I could tell.
Mm.
And the moment he saw me running across the street, he was like, oh, dear, this is what I waited for. Here he is. Okay, fine, I'll unlock the door again. And he was none too pleased. And he said, do you need to warm up? And I was like, no, I'm just going to go. Sorry to waste your time. And I did my two bits. But I think because I was so relaxed because I knew I'd blown it, that I was good. I'm not very good at auditioning. You just get too nervous. It's too synthetic. The relationship is different. You know, I'm great with an audience.
But you got right in. You got into the company.
I got right into the company, as did my mate. So both of us from the same program joined the company at that year. And it was just a, you know, fast and furious relationship. It was exactly what I was looking for. Hit the company right when they were just burgeoning and growing. They were about 5 years old at that point. And I worked, you know, with them for 9 years.
Cincinnati Shakespeare?
Yeah, Cincinnati Shakespeare Company.
Oh, that's right.
When I joined them, they were Festival, and then they changed their name to Company.
Okay.
But I worked with them for 19 years. 9 years, pretty much nonstop. Every season, all season.
Yeah.
And then I moved down here, and then I would go back and forth, and I'd work in both cities
right. When did you
for about another 10 years.
When did you move here?
Oh, That's a good question.
Early 2000s, somewhere in there?
Somewhere in there. Yeah.
And why? What brought you here?
The weather. Wholeheartedly. Yeah. I finally got old enough and I realized that the environment was more important than the location. You just reach a certain age where, no, my comfort level is more important than any sort of professional growth.
You got involved with Guerrilla Theater and some of the others that were here.
I did. I did. Guerrilla Theater gave me my first professional job here in town.
Right.
I was very pleased, and I ended up getting that within the first 2 months of being here.
There you go. So it clicked.
It did.
How long have you been making a living as an actor? Let me just put that
out there. I'm not sure you could ever call it a living.
Well,
I get by with it, and it's been the only thing I've ever really done. Teaching on the side, and a few odd jobs here and there. I've stuffed papers. I've, you know, worked at a restaurant, luckily not for long. And I realized I love it so much. It's the only thing I really want to do.
Yeah.
And I've been doing it so long that it's really the only thing I can do. And I feel like I'm good enough doing it that I should be able to make it work. So I make all the other compromises, so that is the only thing I do.
Can we talk about the other things you do at job site, specifically the sort of Halloween shows? You did just play Dracula it's been a year and a half or something now.
Right. And it was Frankenstein this last year and Dracula the year before.
So you were Dr. Frankenstein with Paul Potenza being amazing as the creature. Logan, who did the makeup, sat in this chair. We talked about Frankenstein.
Right. Another one of those burgeoning local talents.
Oh, Logan's great. So you did, but you also did, for example, Jekyll and Hyde, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Right.
Is that, doing those sort of iconic, creepy characters, does that pull something else out of you?
I mean, yeah, it's been another continuous thread in my artistic career. That darker story, those gothic tales, I've always been attracted to.
Yeah.
And as much as I've done Shakespeare, one of the other genres that I've done a lot of are those, you know, dark gothic shows. I've actually created, when I was just traveling around on my own, I created a solo show, which I titled Turgid Tales of Turmoil, Terror, and Tortured Souls.
Say that fast three times.
Uh-huh. Which was a collection of horror stories through time, and it started out where I did. I played both Mac and Lady Mac from Shakespeare.
Yeah,
and then there was a series of poems, a Native American piece about the coming of the white man by Leslie Marmon Silko. There was an Edgar Allan Poe piece. There was a cutting from Frankenstein, all twined together with a narrator. That would, you know, introduce each piece.
I've seen you know, Quills was brilliant, and Constellations I actually really liked. And I've told
Quills was my my debut with Jobsite.
Oh, there you go.
And I we almost did Quills with the Shakespeare Company. Was one of those plays that made it to the short list.
Yeah.
But it was too racy for us. We had gotten too big and popular by that point. And the artistic director was doubtful whether our audience base could really take the raciness of it.
Yeah.
But having gotten that close and read it myself, I was like, I still want to play this role.
So you did.
So when I heard that Jobsite was doing it, I was like, oh, okay, I've got to knock on this door and see if I can talk David into it. And
well, come in.
Luckily, he did.
Constellations was beautiful.
It's a beautiful play.
The first show I ever saw you in was Cloud Nine. It was right after I'd moved back here.
Right.
And I was like, this is some weird stuff. It's like, I like this company. You know, you did Arturo Uy a year or so ago. Talk to me about The Smuggler, which I knew is coming up this season. This is a one-person
show.
Thanks
for asking. Yeah.
Yeah, and you did it in Sarasota.
I did, with Urbanite Theater.
And this is coming up later in 24, but tell us about this show.
It's a really great piece of verse theater. So it's all written in poetic language. It all rhymes. It's all in verse. It's about an Irish immigrant coming to the States. He's already here by the time the story starts. He's a bartender, has a lot of that Irish charm, and slowly but surely he tells the audience his life story, and right at the end it takes a bit of a dark twist and a surprising turn. So I don't want to give too much away.
Well, it's coming up in August.
It's really about a man struggling to find his way in 21st century America, where the system seems to be set up against him. You know, he's trying to support his family and find a way to survive in a dog-eat-dog capitalist world.
Do you like doing, one-person shows?
I do. I thrive on it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Tell me why.
I feel like I have absolute control of the story. Part of the reason I love the profession is that direct communion with an audience. So the more I get to experience that and celebrate that and build upon it, I think the better my work becomes. One of the reasons why Shakespeare's style plays to my strengths is that it is presentational theater, not representational theater, where in the 20th century we developed the style of representational theater, where the audience acts like a fly on the wall. Those in the drama are not aware that they are being watched. And that's a relatively new development in the art form. Whereas in Shakespeare's time, although there was a drama occurring on stage, the audience was always present. They could recognize the fact that we are simultaneously participating in this storytelling experience.
Is that the fourth wall?
That is the fourth wall, right?
Yeah, okay.
And in Shakespeare's time and in his style and the way that he writes, there is no fourth wall. I can talk directly to the audience, break out of the immediate drama that's occurring on stage, comment on it, and ask the audience to come along with me.
Isn't that, that's kind of like what a one-person show is, isn't
it? Has to be.
That's what you just said, yeah. It's like, Bill, light bulb just went off over my head. That's what he is saying.
That the audience is my scene partner.
Let's, we need to wrap this up because we're just about out of time. Unless there's anything
you make it far too easy and pleasant, Bill.
We've already gone, a little past our time, but I'm going to let this one
run along.
I was afeared,
but this has been a pleasure.
You were afeared.
I was.
Isn't that a theatrical word? I was afeared. anyway, Shakespeare's Twelfth Night runs through February 11th at Jobsite Theater. That is in the Jabe Theater in the Strass Center for the Performing Arts in Tampa.
Beautiful space.
You can go to jobsitetheater.org. Was Twelfth Night one that was so big you had to move it out of Schomburg and go into the bigger space?
Well, actually, we first started working in the bigger space during COVID.
Yeah, I remember, sure.
Luckily, Straz was pleased with our work. We were thrilled to be in that space.
Yeah.
And whenever we can, because we pull so many high school students, in to see our annual Shakespeare's, it's better to have a bigger space because we can fit more students in at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Every year we've been doing it. We've been getting more schools. The schools that have come want to come back. Other schools hear about it and they express interest. So it's a win-win.
You know, it's funny you mention that because the one that I remember from the Schomburg was A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Mm.
And it was so tight and close with, Katrina.
The aerialists.
The aerialists. Yeah. And Cassandra, yes. Hello, Cassandra.
Hi, Cassandra.
Like almost kicking me in the face while I was sitting there. And that was just very intense. But I can see with Twelfth Night, there's all these entrances and exits where it makes more sense.
Mm.
You know, and perhaps it would be cool in the Schomburg, too. I don't know.
I love both spaces and for different reasons. Shakespeare thrives on that immediacy because it is not... as I said, representational, and it is presentational. The presence of the audience is part of the drama.
Mm.
So to have them be that close, the intimacy removed, is a wonderful thing. But again, with the plays on this big scope of this universal themes, and because, you know, they happen in mixed locations, having a bigger theater it does something that a small space can't do.
There was also something with Twelfth Night of a three-ring circus effect to it, where I had this big thing in front of me. It's like, where do I look?
And what a circus it
is. That sequence where they're all hiding behind the pillars.
Oh, it's so perfect for that. Yeah. Hilarious. And David's done a great job of just staging it where, you know, the pillars are up there and they're always there.
Yeah.
And then the action happens in front of the pillars, and you know, you've got the four of them just hiding behind. popping out every once in a while.
Well, let's just say it, folks. Go and see 12th Night through Feb 11th at Jobsite. Giles Davis, absolute pleasure.
As always, Bill. Thank you.
We'll see you down the road, my friend.
Cheers.
From stpetecatalyst.com.